Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Nancy Schwartz, and I represent the appellant in this case, Mr. Mark Elkshoulder. Mr. Elkshoulder is respectfully asking this court to reverse his conviction for failing to register as a sex offender because he had no duty to update his registration under SORNA, and so he was not in violation of the statute. This court is aware of the facts of this case, but I would like to point out how the facts in this case overlap other cases of Mr. Elkshoulder because it is important for my argument. In March 2017, Mr. Elkshoulder was arrested on state charges. At the time, he was transient and living on the streets in Billings, Montana. The next month, he was indicted in Montana District Court cause number CR-1740 with failure to register. Mr. Elkshoulder pled guilty to that offense, and he was sentenced to 12 months custody followed by 5 years of supervised release. In April 2018, Mr. Elkshoulder was due to be released from custody, but he remained incarcerated on those original state court charges. Those charges were eventually resolved, and he was released from jail on November 14, 2018. Upon his release from jail, Mr. Elkshoulder should have checked in with his federal probation officer, but he did not do so, and a warrant was issued for his arrest. He was arrested shortly thereafter and on November 25th, 2018. Then in December 2018, he was sentenced in CR-1740 to 6 months in jail and 30 months supervised release. He was supposed to be released for violating his supervised release conditions in April, but then in March 19, 2019, he was indicted in the present case for failing to update his registration in the 11 days between November 14, 2018, and November 25, when he was arrested for the violation of his supervised release in CR-1740. When I was first looking at this case, it appeared that Mr. Elkshoulder had been indicted based on a misreading of 34 U.S.C. 20913, subpart B, subpart 2, which requires sex offenders to register within 3 days after being sentenced for a sexual offense, if they are being imprisoned for that offense. But as this court is aware, subpart B only applies to the initial registration of sex offenders, or those who are registering with respect to the offense giving rise to the registration requirement. It does not apply to offenders who are released from jail for other offenses. Here it is agreed that Mr. Elkshoulder falls under subsection A of 20913, which requires a sex offender to register and keep his registration current in each jurisdiction where the offender resides and where the offender is an employee.
Counsel, I know you're going through a long narrative here, but sure. I want to tell you what my concern with your argument is. Under C, a sex offender shall not later than 3 business days after each change of name, residence, etc., appear in person. That's the way the statute starts. And I take your argument as being that is not applicable here because leaving prison, no matter how long you've been in prison, if you're going back to where you were, there hasn't been a change in residence. Am I understanding your argument right?
Yes, you are. That is my argument.
Okay, so I don't see how that works under the statute. So even if he doesn't have to register vis-a-vis the prison, under the statute and under the guidance issued by the Attorney General, I don't see how when he leaves prison, where he's been for however long he was, he hasn't changed his residence under the plain language of the statute, and also, even if it's not so plain, under the guidance issued by the Attorney General, who has discretion. So, to borrow one of Judge Kristen's questions in another case, please give me your best argument as to why his leaving prison and going back where he had lived before isn't a change in residence under the statute.
My best argument on that is that the government's argument is putting language into the statute that's not there, which is precluded by at least the United States Supreme Court in Nichols. And it's also precluded by this court's decision in Cohen v. United States, which I cite at page 17 of my brief, where the Ninth Circuit indicated that one does not change his residence to prison by virtue of being incarcerated there.
Hold on. We're not talking about going into prison. I think that's uncontested. He didn't have to register and give the government notice he was being admitted into prison, right? We're talking about when he comes back out. So think of, if you break down Judge Bennett's question, because I think he and I have the same question, and his question baked in however long he was in prison. So if we break it down, and we're just talking about getting out of prison, transitioning from prison to back on the streets in Billings, and mm-hmm. for this hypothetical, let's say he's been there at least 30 days, because our understanding, per your briefing, is that if you're residing somewhere habitually for 30 days, that becomes a residence. Why doesn't he have to report that if he's in prison? Not overnight. He's not there over the weekend. But if he's in prison, or jail for 30 days, why doesn't that constitute a change that has to be reported, please?
Well, and I wouldn't even really say that he has to be out for 30 days. What section I thought applied to Mr. Elkshoulder was 20918, which requires him to engage in periodic in-person verification because he's a Tier 3 offender. And so he has to appear in person every 3 months. And so my position is that his residence has not changed. He habitually lived on, he's homeless before he went into custody. He's homeless when he comes out. And so his residence has not changed.
I want to break that down if I could. Forgive me for interrupting. But when you say he was homeless in the streets of Billings, before he went into prison, nobody's contesting, I think, that he had to report going into prison. I think Judge Bennett's question is, what after he's in prison, for our hypothetical, he's there 30 days and gets back out. Does he have to report that? So your briefing says repeatedly that there was no change. He was homeless in Billings, right. And he was homeless in Billings. I can't find in the record anywhere where it tells me that he was registered as homeless in Billings before he went into prison. Was that his registered address?
His registered address was not homeless in Billings. It was an address in Billings. But that was why I spent time addressing what had happened with the other case, because there's no question that he had already been charged with failing to register for the period of time that he was in custody, before he went into custody on that state charge.
Right, but if that's the case, if his official registered address wasn't homeless in Billings, then when he gets back out of prison, then I don't know how you can tell you can argue that there wasn't a change in his residence.
Okay. So in your brief, you say he last registered in compliance with SORNA in April 2016. So you're saying he registered in April 2016.
And that never changed. Right, and that is somewhat misleading, because when he registered in April 2016, the indictment in CR 1740 covered the dates from December 31st, 2016 until April 20, 2017. And so those dates were already charged in the previous case. My position is that the government jumped the gun on this one, that he was only out for 11 days, and they had an obligation to give him more time to register before they charge him with another offense.
But counsel, so the statute that I'm looking at says 3 business days, but the statute also, in order to convict your client who pled guilty conditionally, there has to be a knowing violation. So if your client's view was he got wrong information or he thought something incorrectly, your client could have gone to trial, right? Because the government would have to prove a knowing violation.
That is true. And looking back on that, what I was following was the decision of Nichols, where that defendant had actually entered a conditional guilty plea and then challenged the specific interpretation of the statute. Because what the judge did here was just questioning whether or not a change in residence and whether a term of incarceration qualifies as a change in residence. And so that was the basis of filing.
So counsel, is it your position that no matter where the prison is and no matter how long the person goes in for, when the person gets out of any prison, wherever he or she goes to, there is no requirement to go in within 3 business days, and if they previously were on the registry, there's no obligation to go anywhere within 3 business days, no matter what, as long as they're coming out of prison?
Right, because I think that's the rule that applies to prisoners who have homes. When they go into prison, when they have a residence and then they return to that residence, I'm not aware of any requirement for them to go in and re-register that residence. They only have the obligation to register once the other parts of the statute come into play. For instance, the periodic registration within the 3 months for a tier three offender. So someone who has a residence, I'm sorry.
Go ahead and finish your statement. You are out of time. Go ahead and finish your statement, please.
Someone who has a residence and goes into prison and then returns back to that residence doesn't have an obligation to update the registration within 3 days. And that should be the same case for someone who's homeless. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll put a minute back on the clock so you can plan accordingly. You'll get a little rebuttal time, but we'd like to hear from the government next, please.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. Zeno Bacchus, U.S. Attorney's Office, District of Montana, may please the court. This case concerns the application of two terms contained within SORNA, words residence and change, to a sex offender's failure to update his registration when he is released from custody. Now, Mr. Elkshoulder, who has two prior convictions for failing to register pursuant to SORNA, was released from custody in November 2018, failed to inform the jurisdiction within 3 business days, per statute, as to this change in residence. He violated the terms of SORNA as a result and run afoul of one of its main purposes. As the court is aware, when Congress enacted SORNA in 2006, one of the principal reasons for enacting this legislation was to be able to track sex offenders. That is, their location needed to be known by law enforcement and the community. One of the key mechanisms in doing so and achieve this goal was the imposition of criminal penalties for those defendants or those sex offenders who fail to register within prescribed periods of time. And as well, again, SORNA requires a sex offender to update his registration not later than 3 business days after a change in his residence.
Forgive me. It's kind of hard on Zoom to get the lawyer's attention sometimes. So forgive my, I don't mean to be rude, but I would like to know at in this record, did you introduce evidence to establish Mr. Elkshoulder's existing registration?
We did not, Your Honor. That is not in the record. There essentially was almost an agreed upon statement of facts by the parties, frankly, for purposes of the motion to dismiss. And the issue that's presented by, Mr. Elkshoulder was whether he had a duty to register within 3 days after being discharged after 18 months roughly in custody.
Right, but the question is, and the district court relied upon, I think, the definition of change, what it meant to change residence. And so that presupposes that we have to know what he's changing from. If you didn't rely on the fact, I think we have a concession. Let me back up. The stipulated, what I considered to be stipulated fact in this case is that Mr. Elkshoulder had been homeless on the streets in Billings before he went into prison, and then counsel's argument is premised on the fact that he went back to being homeless when he was released from prison. But it seems to be the case that his prior registration wasn't homeless in prison. It was a different address, a street address in Billings. So that seems to me to be problematic. But anyway, that's not what's argued here today for some reason. Your argument is that there was a change of his residence. So you're just looking at the changes from being in prison to being out of prison. Is that it?
That's correct, Your Honor, yes.
Okay. If that's the case, then my next question is, does it matter how long he was in prison? In this case, it was more than 30 days, right?
It was. It was roughly 18 months. That's correct.
Okay. Under your theory of this statute, if he'd been in prison for a week, would that change the outcome here?
Your Honor, respectfully, I think it would. Judge Waters in the district court noted footnote 2, I think excerpts of record 18 in her opinion. And that issue was not before the court, the district level, so not here. But the court could imagine a situation, for example, where somebody's in custody for a few days. One could see a sex offender that gets a DUI, spends a weekend in prison or jail, and whether they have to essentially re-register when they're released. I don't think that would be the case. I think that the length of prison served by the sex offender is highly relevant as to whether there is a duty to change the registration or update the registration when they are discharged.
And when you say highly relevant, is it highly relevant based on the Attorney General's definition of habitually lives if it's at least 30 days? So when you say highly relevant, are you saying it's highly relevant under this, whether it's more or less than 30 days, or are you saying something else?
The district court posited that the 30-day would be a good essentially cutoff if somebody's
okay, but I'm asking you the government's position. Is it the government's position 29 days don't have to do it, 31 days do have to do it?
Your Honor, Judge Bennett, I think I think it's fact dependent, and I think that 30 days would be highly informative as to whether somebody established residence in jail. They are guidelines, they are followed, but the residence is the key question. And if somebody is in jail for more than 30 days, the government would probably take the position that that is in fact their residence. That as a result of being in custody and for 18 months here, for example, Mr. Elkshoulder was in custody. Law enforcement knew where he was. He was receiving his mail there. He was making phone calls there. He could see visitors there. So the issue is whether they established their residence as a result of being in custody. And the length of the time, yes, is very informative as to whether the residence is established.
Do either of my colleagues have any additional questions for the government?
No.
Okay. Thank you very much for your argument.
Your Honor.
We'll hear from defense counsel again, please.
Thank you. Judge Bennett's question raises a very important point about what is the legal effect of those guidelines versus what is the language of the statute. Because the guidelines were actually something that was directed at the jurisdictions in implementing SORNA. They don't create independent obligations to register. So the 30 days is only appears in the guidelines. It doesn't appear in the statute. It habitually lives has been defined in the guidelines as 30 days, but there's nowhere in the statute that requires that. And so there's certainly, for instance, Nichols, there's cases where the guidelines actually have more requirements than does the statute, and that has not been held sufficient to file to constitute a violation of SORNA.
Counsel, that might help somebody, but I don't see how that helps you, given the length of time your client was incarcerated. I'm not sure that the government's position makes a lot of sense to me, but I'm not sure it matters here where your client was in for 18 months, right?
Yes, he was in custody. And again, he was in custody for violating supervised release conditions for failing to register previously. So it was all very related. Again, my final argument was just that the argument is putting in language into the statute 20913C. It's adding or release from incarceration into that paragraph. And they could have done that had they wanted to do so. They've done that as far as initial registration. They've been required them to report within 3 days after they're convicted. They could have done that and they didn't do so. And so there's no requirement for Mr. Elkshoulder to have registered in this case. Thank you.
Thank you both. We appreciate your argument very, very much. It's very helpful. We're going to take that case under advisement and go on to the final case on our calendar this morning. That is case number 20-70137.